Thanks for joining us on another Bible Hour B-Side. I'm your host, Mike Ahn. On the B-Sides, I invite my friends from our campus ministry team to reflect and discuss the previous podcast. We explore concepts and try to make connections to our real-life situations. In this episode, I continue to discuss the sanctity of life with Lisa Igram and Landon White. We start the conversation by addressing the biases we bring into this conversation, and then discuss how we can promote both feminist ideals and protect the rights of the unborn child. Our conversation helped me realize how hard it is to promote two seemingly opposing views on the political spectrum. I can't wait to share our conversation with you, so let's jump right in. Hey, we're here with Lisa and Landon. We're going to talk through Penny Nance's interview. Welcome, guys.
Thanks for having us, Mike.
All right. Well, at the forefront of this, we just want to recognize that this is an extremely complex issue, abortion is, and it's extremely nuanced. There's a lot of stakeholders in this. People have different agendas. And we just want to recognize we're not experts in abortion law or abortion ethics or anything like that, but we think this is an important thing to talk through,
so we
definitely want to do that.
Yeah.
Also at the forefront of this, we want to recognize that BIOLA has a statement on the sanctity of life. It's a theological distinctive of BIOLA University, and that we actually do agree that life is from conception to death.
Absolutely.
Totally, yeah.
And it's not just qualified by
one's quality of life or
that's right.
whatever.
But it's actually life as life itself is important because that is something that God has
created
and ordained. Great. So, and we all definitely do agree with that. Also, to start this off, we want to recognize that we bring in a bunch of biases into this.
For sure.
Definitely.
And so I want to go around the table and just recognize what are some of the biases that we think we are bringing into this, whether it's from our, it's our gender or age or marriage or et cetera, whatever you guys think is important for us to just kind of start this conversation off with, let's just say so.
For sure.
So I'll start. I am a 38-year-old male, married, and I have two kids. I have known people who have had abortions. I know one person who was born out of a sexual assault, if I may say so, and she has struggled a lot with her identity throughout her life, but her mom considered abortion and definitely thinks she made the right decision over time. That was someone I met in college. I have never asked anybody to have an abortion or anything like that. I've definitely talked with students and talked with people in the past about what abortion is and maybe even the personal struggles with it or their as they've been thinking through it.
I'm a, what did you say, your age? I'm a 29-year-old male who's not married. I have and I don't have any kids. I've not walked with somebody through the process of birth or any of that. I think I am a bit more distanced from the issue than both of y'all. I don't know anybody that's had an abortion. I do a close friend of mine I know in their past had paid for a woman to have an abortion, supported that. So, and hearing some of his struggles with that and some of his processing after the fact. But other than that, I think quite a bit distanced from the issue.
Okay.
And I am a 37-year-old woman. I'm also single. I would love to be married and have kids right now, but that's not where God has me. I have an older sister who is severely disabled. She has cerebral palsy. And so this issue deeply affects decisions my family has made. And I also grew up in a context in the 80s and 90s of listening to folks on the family. My parents are staunch Republicans, and so the whole idea of family values and abortion being part of the political process is something I grew up with, like that they're deeply embedded together. So it's been interesting now as an adult to kind of look back on that. And I've done a little bit of studying on feminism because of the diverse reactions within and without of the Christian community, the diverse reactions we have. So there are some things that I've thought about there, too.
Great. Thanks, Lisa. You know, you said you studied feminism a little bit and you thought through that a little bit.
Yeah.
I'd love for you to walk us through some of the things that you've learned. And, you know, Penny definitely walked through the idea of Susan B. Anthony and Elizabeth Cady Stanton of, like, suffragists and things like that. But if you could help outline some of the feminist movements for us as we start this conversation, that'd be great.
Yeah. So part of why I decided I really need to learn more about this is because a couple of years ago, actually here on Biola's campus, a feminist club started. And this started kind of a social media firestorm where people were accusing the club of being man-haters.
Okay.
And others were cheering on fight against oppression. So I thought, those are really strongly nuanced, like strongly stated and reactionary reactions to the start of this club. So I kind of need to understand it more. So, and actually Penny brought it out that feminism, first wave feminism in the United States started among Christians. So there was a woman in 1840, she was an American Quaker, Lucretia Mott, and she was chosen to go represent anti-slavery movement in London.
Mm-hmm.
And as she's at this convention as a female, she's realizing that in the political arena, she has no voice.
Mm-hmm.
Men are in the political arena. Men have voice there. And so she and then 30 years later, a woman named Frances Willard, who also deeply cared about social issues in the United States, but realized that in order to impact social issues, they had to have a political voice. That was kind of the start of the suffragette movement, first wave feminism, that eventually got women the vote. But that came about because of concern for moral issues in America.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Now, early on, after women got the vote, kind of the religious push behind that got lost in favor of a high emphasis on individual rights.
Okay.
So what happened in the 60s and 70s, as women were joining forces with men in the civil rights movement to fight for equal rights, regardless of your ethnic background, women in that civil rights movement realized, oh my goodness, my brothers on the left are not treating me well either. Like, my voice isn't heard here either.
Wow.
So that's kind of how the second wave feminist movement started.
Mm-hmm.
Three major outcomes of second wave feminism were rights for abortion, laws against domestic violence that previously hadn't existed, and the Equal Rights Amendment. So when the church is looking at what's going on, it gets really confusing, right? Because clearly abortion is not something that we agree with as followers of God.
Mm-hmm.
Again, life starting at conception. At the same time, domestic abuse is a major issue and needed to be addressed.
Yeah.
And so that positive outcome of second wave feminism kind of got shoved under the rug a little bit in the church's mind, in my opinion, just from what I've been reading, because abortion was such a big problem.
Right.
So the church had to grapple with this. Some of what we can see now in the church happening, the debate between complementarianism and egalitarianism, is a result of the feminist movement, second wave feminism.
Mm.
But the interesting thing is that some people say that we're now in the midst of third wave feminism, which has two major things that are kind of part of it. First is a desire to unify these extreme ideologies. So to unify kind of the left-leaning and the right-leaning ideas of what feminism is under one umbrella for the sake of women's rights around the world. So for the sake of education for girls in areas of the world that don't have access to education, for the sake of women who are being sold into slavery and sex trafficking.
Mm.
So third wave feminism is actually marked by this really strong desire for social justice, particularly in the church. So when I hear a lot of our students talking about their desire to impact and to help people who are in sex trafficking or to make sure that we're bringing education to people around the world and to women around the world, they're actually part of kind of a Christian third wave feminism that they don't even really know about.
Wow.
Yeah.
So I think that's fascinating. So
you're intimating that it's kind of like a lot of the social justice movements that are happening these days is kind of an outgrowth of what the feminists have started over the years, over the last 200 years almost.
And you can actually say it in the reverse, that social justice has started feminism too.
Mm.
All of them coming out of, well, I would say first wave feminism and then like significant streams of third wave feminism coming out of a Christian desire to do justly, love mercy, to stand up for the poor and the oppressed and the widow.
Right, right.
Wow.
So there you have it.
Cool. When you said there's something you said about these extreme ideologies, about what feminism is. Like, what are those, what do you see those as right now? Like,
yeah,
what,
right now.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's really complicated. Mm-hmm. So here's some thoughts.
Yeah.
Even during first wave feminism, there was an confusion or split among the feminists at that time about what God was saying about women. So are women, should women be following kind of the traditional Christian role of raising a family, or do women have equal voice in the church? Are they allowed to preach? You know, those kinds of things. That,
right.
that kind of mm-hmm. thing has been talked about for generations.
Mm-hmm.
I think now, today, kind of the opposing streams could include, for example, on the far left, pro-choice, extreme right over my body,
mm-hmm.
Women almost being better than men in a lot of ways,
mm-hmm.
Fighting the oppressive patriarchy, language that's kind of extreme on that end. And then folks on the right who are part of the pro-life movement,
mm-hmm.
who are involved in pregnancy care clinics, who want to see women step into the femininity that they believe God has designed for them.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, on the left, there's also an idea of femininity that they believe God has designed for them. And I think there is so I think the Women's March actually that happened recently kind of shows this, where Christians who decided to take part in that
mm-hmm.
wanted to put aside kind of the ideological differences
right.
to make a public and unified statement. And that was hard for some Christians to watch,
right.
by
that's
the way.
Right, that's right.
Yeah.
But others decided to do that for the sake of something bigger that they saw needed to be said.
Yeah.
So what do you think this is? Like, you know, on the right, we definitely have the political issue of abortion mm-hmm. or of pro-life issues, right? And on the left, it seems like immigration and poverty and you know, refugees, things like that are taken a little more seriously. Why is it so separated if the third wave feminism feels like they're trying to unite all of this?
For sure.
What do you guys think?
I mean, I have thoughts and then...
I mean, we're not experts again.
Yeah,
we're just kind of thinking this through a little bit.
Sure.
Because, and you know, again, we want to recognize that like political rhetoric...
Yes.
Is extremely strong.
Yes.
And makes us sway a certain way. And in fact, that's what it's designed to do.
Yeah.
Right? It's designed to like make us click ads. It's designed to make us vote a certain way.
Yeah.
So we want to kind of like get through the political rhetoric and just kind of look at the issues. And why is it so separated though?
Yeah. I think part of it is because politics is so entangled with morality in a lot of ways. So,
yeah.
So I mentioned that I grew up in the 80s and 90s where republicanism was equal to family values, which was equal to pro-life.
Right, right.
Those were the major issues that the church was concerned with.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Keeping families together. Like, those were the major issues of the time. And it may have been in response, actually, to the civil rights movement or to the part – this gets really complicated, but not to the civil rights movement, but to the parts of the feminist movement that were in their minds, degrading family.
Mm.
So in the 80s and 90s, those were the highest values. But I think what's happened is that the church has backed up a little bit and seen the ways that human life has been degraded
right.
In other ways. So the refugee crisis,
right.
Immigration issues, poverty, things like that. And I have a feeling that on the Democratic side politically, mm-hmm. they've started addressing those issues before Republicans did. And
right.
so then it becomes confusing for a church who's traditionally identified as Republican,
right?
Right? Like they've conflated these things
right.
To kind of know what to do. It just gets confusing.
Right, right.
I'm really interested in what's going on in the minds of individuals psychologically with some of these things. Given that our brains love categories, we love like placing things in boxes because that makes decisions easier to make.
Like, for sure.
Fire burns, don't touch it.
Right.
Right. Like, and you don't, when you think about a fire, like you don't, it's not in like your whatever prefrontal cortex. You're not saying, oh, that is a fire. I am not going to touch it. You don't have that dialogue because
right.
your brain is so used to fire bad or whatever. It's in this like back part of your brain. So our brain wants to do that. And so I'm just interested in how much that affects some of our political speech too, is our beliefs is like, they're Republican, they're this, they're Democrat, they're this,
or for sure,
they're pro-choice, that means this,
right?
It's this category. And this brings me to a conversation I had actually with one of our colleagues a couple of weeks ago, and he was saying that he's stepping away from Facebook because he's voiced a lot of things on Facebook, and when he encounters opposing opinions that way, he's very distant from it. But recently, he's struck up a friendship who with someone who has a very different political stance than him. And he said it's much harder because I have, like, I want to maintain friendship. I want to. And so I listen to this guy's stories. I listen to his opinions, where when it's in, like, social media, it's just easy for me to say that's them.
Right.
They're in this category. They're in this box.
Right.
They're this way.
Yeah.
But when it's his friend, it's very different. So I don't know. I don't think that's a full explanation to your question of, like, why are these so distant? But
right.
I do think there's a psychological component that possibly media, especially social media, is kind of reinforcing for us.
Right.
In this time.
Which makes sense. I mean, earlier Mike was kind of referencing this whole idea that, well, it's clear in the last year, a lot of my understanding of what's happening in politics right now has come through social media.
Mm-hmm,
like,
mm-hmm.
Social media has become political given this season, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when you combine politics with something like social media or the media, which is all about trying to get you to click so that they can earn money, right? There's
right.
capitalism.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Then you're going to speak an extreme language, because when my emotions are sparked, I'm going to click on it.
Mm.
And that just kind of fosters an inability to really listen and engage, which is kind of what you were referencing earlier.
Right. Yeah.
And that's hard. You know, it's another issue is, like, if you got the Republican platform, let's say, and you got the Democratic platform, and there's all these issues that get bundled together.
For sure.
And then in the end, you have to choose for one candidate.
Yes.
And you're like,
yeah,
I am going to vote for all of this platform versus all of this platform. But you know what? There's good and bad in
every
single platform.
Mm-hmm.
So then how do we do this well? And in some sense, like, I think I'm hearing Penny say, you know, abortion is, like, the issue. And that
right.
is the most important thing, because it's about protecting the unborn, because they are the most
vulnerable
in our time.
Yeah.
And I definitely hear that, and I definitely agree with her in a lot of ways. But is that, like, the most important thing that would drive any platform? What if that got packaged with all this other stuff that
sure.
I don't like?
For sure.
Right.
And so yeah. I just wonder, how do we distinguish politics and faith and ethics, and just kind of, like, you know, how do we untangle some of that stuff to actually think through which one is a more of a priority for us to vote for, even?
Mm-hmm. I know. Man, if I could have cracked that nut before the election, I'd be so much happier.
Because that's a hard one, especially.
It is.
And you know what, like, again, we work on a college campus.
Yeah.
And this was the first year that a lot of our students got to vote.
Mm-hmm.
And I've said this, where this is one of the first years that I actually, like, really cared about what was going on in politics.
For sure.
And it just kind of made me think, wow, this is really, really complicated.
For sure. I think what was hard for me about this election was, for me, from my perspective, there was a clear immoral posture from one of the candidates.
Both, in some sense.
Okay, both, yes.
You're
both.
Right. Uh-huh. Just to be fair.
Right.
No, yeah, that's good. And then when things like abortion or caring for the helpless who are already living in society come
right.
up, it's hard to navigate that.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. This was a rough one, guys.
It was hard.
Yeah.
Do you know what I think I would like to promote, though, if we could? I mean, I don't know what the solution is, but I wish there was a way to have more nuanced conversation about the complexity of all these issues without
yeah.
putting each other in boxes.
Yeah.
Without saying, oh, that's because you're a crazy Republican or you're a liberal Democrat or whatever the case may be.
Yeah, yeah.
But instead to be more thoughtful about the issues without being so dichotomous.
Right, for sure. I think I'm even interested with what we're talking about right here, that feminism, I didn't admit this bias earlier, but it came to me as we were talking, is a bit of a, like, we all have our, like, tribe bias, right? And so my tribe, evangelicals, like, there's that voice is in my head saying certain things about these issues.
Mm-hmm.
And so even, I don't think this is representative of all evangelicals, but maybe some of what I grew up in is, like, feminism is a bad word.
For sure.
Right?
So it is a bad word.
So hearing you talk about it, it's like, it's easy for me to just drift that, oh, here Lisa's talking about feminism. That's a, you know, whatever thing. But to stop myself, to be aware of myself and be like, oh, wait, there's more, this is more nuanced than I want to think. So I think that's a thing for all of us is to stop and think about, where did we get that idea? Why do we think this?
Mm-hmm.
And could I possibly be wrong? Am I open to seeing another side of it? Or not even another side, like there's always sides. Am I open to hearing the nuances?
Yes.
And so I'm interested, from your perspective, Lisa, what have you seen as that negative reaction to this word?
For sure.
Especially in the evangelical context. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think if people say they're feminists, the image that comes to mind, and this is from my childhood in my tribe, is bra burning man hating, you know? Like that's what happened in the 70s.
Right.
And then there's some kind of fear connected to that word too.
Yeah.
That I haven't quite been able to dig under and see.
Yeah.
There's a desire to be entirely biblical. You know, a part of the fear is that there's a very clear it isn't clear, but there are clear stances on what's biblical and what's not biblical.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes those stances are conflicting, and we want to be biblical. We want to be right.
Of course.
And so then there's fear about associating with something that may be anti-biblical. So like feminism has been connected to anti-biblical.
Yeah.
Whew.
But you know, again, what that shows is that feminism has become such a emotionally driven word.
That's exactly right.
But if you look at the issues here, what is feminism, or again, not all of it, but the bulk, like my understanding of feminism, let's say, is that it's asking for equal rights.
Right.
Males and women, and males and females should have equal rights.
Right.
What is wrong with that? I think that should be something that we all stand up for.
Yeah. So I wonder what it is that, like, how it's perceived. Because even when you said about man-hating, I'm like, oh, yeah, that was a little bit of my – that's been a bit of my rub before. Mm-hmm, it's like I hear some woman standing up about women and how they're this and what I'm hearing, not what I think they're saying.
Mm-hmm.
But the way I think I've perceived it is like, I'm bad. I'm the oppressor.
Right.
I'm the – you know. And so – when it said, like, well, this people group doesn't have the same rights, it's instantly interpreted as, like, well, that's my fault. What you're saying is that's my fault.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Which is not always what they're saying.
No, huh?
Right.
But that's, speaking as a white male who's on that end of that discussion most of the time.
It's always your fault, Landon.
Right, it's always my fault. Is that that's just how it's perceived, and I've seen that happen for a lot of people. So, but what has helped me is discussions like with like the things you were saying earlier, Lisa, is to help it be more nuanced.
Yeah.
To be like, oh, this is not just like men are bad and been keeping women down forever. That's not the core of that message.
For sure.
There's a lot more to it.
So there's probably, I think there's work to be done on all sides to come to speak, to talk together and listen and understand.
Right.
One of my colleagues is fond of quoting, your liberation is bound up with mine. Like there is something about the things that maybe some feminists are fighting for in terms of equality that actually will be better for the whole.
Right.
You know, there may be ways that men are held back because women are put in a particular place, quote unquote.
Right.
You know.
Yeah. You know, I want to kind of go back and unpack nuanced conversations. We've been talking about that a little bit, and it's the idea that let's get rid of the rhetoric, let's get rid of the sound bites, let's get rid of like all the emotional kind of things, and how can we approach and create space for a nuanced conversation, and how do we do that well, and where do we see this?
Yeah.
It's so hard.
I mean, it is hard.
One of the things that I think we can all continue to learn how to do is to listen and ask questions.
Yeah.
I think it's a discipline to hold back my emotional reaction to something or my immediate need to say something about a particular opinion, and to pause and to listen and to ask a question and unpack with somebody else their ideas before I say my own.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a discipline a lot of us can continue to engage in. I know I need to keep doing that.
Of course.
Yeah, I like one of the communications profs here at Biola has these like four rules of how to have a good healthy conversation.
Yeah.
And I forget the other three all the time. but the first one I think is so valuable is knowing what we agree upon. I think we always, most conversations we start with what we disagree upon.
Yeah.
And I think that's vital to even to making your point.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you're trying to persuade somebody, it's like you need to know a value that they have that you share, that you can even build your argument on.
Yeah.
Right? Like, so for us here, like most of the time, like we argue with the Bible. Like that's the thing that happens at Biola, and it's pretty standard.
Mm-hmm.
Like everybody's like, well, the Bible says, well, if you're talking to a non-Christian or an atheist or somebody that doesn't believe in the authority of Scripture, that doesn't work. You need to know that that's a place that you don't necessarily disagree. So with that principle in mind, I've tried to enter these conversations trying to find the thing that person values.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to keep asking them questions until I find a place that we see things similarly and then go from there. Because if we never find any similarities, where are we going to start?
You know, I have heard it said that pro-choice movement doesn't want more abortions. They're not advocating for more abortions.
Right.
They're advocating that it be safe and accessible. And so I wonder, and if they don't want more abortions, I imagine they'd want to reduce abortions. I mean, I don't know. I'd have to right. dig into that with yeah. somebody. But if I'm pro-life and I'm talking to a pro-choice person and we both say, yeah, we don't want more abortions,
mm-hmm.
then let's talk about the issues of economics and society and poverty and all the things that help feed into why a person would actually make the choice to have an abortion.
That's right.
And let's try to address those problems together and how much farther we'd get rather than putting each other in those boxes
yeah.
and putting up the wall because you're on that side, I'm on this side.
Yeah.
I mean, in the end, these are super complex issues.
For sure.
And you know what? Like, people are going to disagree. And finding places of agreement and places of like, your liberation is my liberation, mm-hmm. you know, this unifying factor, that's huge.
Mm-hmm.
And like, but what makes us so scared of disagreement? Do you know what I mean? Mm. It feels like once I disagree with you, I can't be your friend anymore. I'm going to unfollow you.
Right.
Right.
It's like once I'm not like, okay with you here, if I don't agree with what you're saying, or if you're not like tickling my ears a certain way, then like I just can't listen to you anymore. What is that?
Yeah, you know, you hit it. Fundamentally, we don't want conflict,
mm-hmm.
right? I think that's even an inborn, like God-given desire. It's what we do with it, right? It's that yeah. We all have this sense, however distorted it may be in each of us,
mm-hmm.
that, but it exists, this sense that this is not the way it's supposed to be. So even my conflict with you, my brother, because we don't see eye to eye on something.
Yeah, yeah.
That's not the way it's supposed to be.
Right.
So conflict, I don't want to be around that. So I have choices of how to change that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the easier choice is avoidance.
For sure.
Mm.
Is walk away. Is like, I just won't, we won't have this. We won't have to talk about this.
Sounds like we're a bunch of 3-year-olds.
Yeah. This is true.
We haven't grown past 3 years
right,
old.
Right, yep.
I wonder if there's also a sense where my opinion is deeply wrapped up in my value and my sense of personal worth.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So if you disagree with my opinion, you might disagree with who I am as a person.
Yeah.
And so I wonder if there's a little bit of humility that's required. Mm-hmm. Like, this is my opinion. This is what I think now, for sure. And I'm going to hold out the possibility that I might be wrong or might not be seeing it in a the fullest perspective that I could.
Mm-hmm.
To kind of detach a little bit from my opinion, mm-hmm. which is really hard when what social media does tend to do is play with our emotions. And not just social media, but media in general, right?
Right.
Yeah. There's, I don't know why this image came into my mind, but I'm going to share it anyway. There's this like a Pixar DreamWorks short about, there's like this little bird that, it's before one of the movies, you know, they always have like the little five minute.
Ones, yeah, I like this.
Before that. And one, it's this bird that it's like baby bird and wave, it's at the beach and a wave comes and it's like, it's trying to get the oysters or the whatever out of the sand, the little crabs or whatever.
The sand crabs.
Yeah. They come up and he's trying to get them or whatever. But the wave comes and he's afraid of it and he always keeps running away. And one time he gets distracted or something and it's too late and the wave's there and he just ducks and he ducks straight down and the water passes over him and he comes back up and he's like,
and he was fine.
I'm okay.
He didn't die.
I'm okay. Yeah. And I think that's how we are with conflict.
Yeah.
Is like we're so used to it's bad, run away from it.
Yeah.
And then, but maybe the better way is through it. Because then we can get to the thing we want to get to.
Yeah.
And so I think to me that's the way of Jesus is the way to life is through death is through the cross and through the resurrection, not trying to run from this.
Right.
And so for me it's like, okay, I have this conflict with my brother or my sister. I'm gonna press through it. Yeah. I'm going to go through it. And then I feel like every time I do that, on the other side of it, on the other side of the wave, is better life.
Right.
But as long as I'm running from the wave, I'm always just on shore and I'm not getting to deeper relationships.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, Penny points out that the science of this is pretty clear.
Mm-hmm.
Like even at 18 days, the heart's beating, or you could definitely recognize that this is a person.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, the political things and whatever ethics and whatnot have confused and merged this issue, social media also. And this is just like a super complex issue.
It is.
And the way that we have adopted this issue in some sense in 2017 from the 80s and from the 1840s and whatnot, it's just not going to go away. And we just need a lot more humility, as you guys are saying, a lot more listening skills, conflict management skills, even to kind of get through this and not around it or above it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I totally agree. Yeah. I think for me, even admitting my biases earlier, there's a part of me with this issue. It's like, I don't know anybody that's gone through and, you know, had an abortion or even been faced with that choice,
mm-hmm.
like faced with like, what do I do here? And so I don't think it's going to totally change my opinion, but like it would be important for me to hear that story and hear that. But there's this part of me that wants to run away from the wave.
For sure.
Like, I like my opinion. Right. I want to stay with it.
Yeah.
But to have that conversation with somebody I think is healthy for me.
Right. No, and that conversation does have a lot going on, as Lisa was alluding to before.
Mm-hmm.
There are certain things with health and money and jobs career. And I mean, there's lots of things happening.
Yep.
And so we want to understand the context of everything.
Absolutely.
And this might not always be the right answer for everything.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Any closing thoughts, guys?
This is a hard one.
This was so hard.
Yeah.
This is difficult.
I'm glad I get to do it with you guys because you guys have the same hair. And, you know,
the listeners don't know that.
But you guys both have
a secret to them, you know, until now.
Dark brown, curly, wavy hair. And it's just like, I'm like looking at twins, except Landon has a beard.
Do you have a beard?
I don't think I'm going to do that.
No beard for you.
That's not your style,
I might try your conditioner, though.
Hey. I don't know.
Well, again, thanks for being here with us, and we're grateful to have this conversation. So,
bye, Mike.
See you soon.
Thanks for listening to this B-side. If you like what you heard, please subscribe and rate us on iTunes and connect with us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Also, check out our website at biola.edu/the-Biola-Hour. And be sure to catch our next podcast with Adam Edgerly, a pastor and cultural consultant, as we discuss how the church can promote diversity issues.